This episode of the A-Team is brought to you by FaceToFaceGames.com, Canada's number one source for Magic the Gathering card singles.
Jane Tarski, you are not the father.
But you are afraid of Olive. Then we have some Olive!
Welcome to the A-Team Podcast, brought to your ears by ManaDeprived.com, home of Canadian Magic.
In 2010, a crack Magic playing unit was sent to prison by the DCI court for mise they didn't commit. These men promptly escaped from a federal pound-me-in-the-ass prison to the Canadian underground. Today, still wanted by Wizards of the Coast, they survive as podcasters of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can listen to The A-Team.
KYT.
It's just like, why? Not everything I do is like horrible. You can't have it both ways, old man.
Jay Boosh.
Damn it! Why am I always so ahead of the curve, and then somebody like Owen makes a deck popular, and now I sound like every deck brewer on the planet?
Scotty.
It's actually a secret ploy for her to get you two to spend more time together. Your mom next levels you.
It's all yeah, like, serious.
And Jeremy.
Do you know how hard it is to buy Korean singles?
No.
And when you put Korean singles into Google's, do you know what you get? You don't get Magic cards.
And now, the A-Team.
Hello, it is Jeremy Scumbag Schofield, and welcome to the A-Team, number 175 minus 2, 173. I call 175 bitches. With you,
what the fuck,
Mr. Scotty Mac. How are you, Scotty?
I'm awesome, Jerry. You?
Doing fantastic, doing great. Had some Coke. We don't know which type, but I think it's awesome. The Batman himself, Mr. KYT. How are you?
What up, biatch?
Yeah.
And I'm great.
Himself, the one, the only, the king of the motherfucking north, Mr. J. Boosh.
Yo. Yo. Oh.
That's it?
I'm over here now.
Are you over there?
I'm over here.
I am over here.
What's happening?
So?
Everybody.
How was everyone's exciting week?
Super awesome. And yours?
It was good. I worked a lot, which is, you know, a thing that you do. And that's fine. Nothing wrong with working a lot.
No.
My little girl's sick right now. That's terrible.
That is terrible.
Yeah. But yeah, I played a little bit of Magic and did terribly, so that was fantastic.
Awesome.
Same here.
Yeah. Yeah, I've just been trying to play some Magic online. I've actually, I'm not a very good control player. So right, I've been putting myself to playing more control.
That's cool. And
didn't we talk about this before where you said you're not good at control because you can't, you don't pay attention enough or something? You just want to play things and attack and then say go?
Kind of.
So there'll be times where you're like, yeah, all right. It doesn't matter what he does because I have Mana Leak and Counterspell in my hand. And then they play something and you're like, yeah, that's fine. Ah, fuck! Take his back piece! Take his back piece!
Well, you know, it's actually funny because that's where I've just been getting dominated on Magic Online. Where it's like, I've been playing like Modern and I've been playing Standard. And like in Modern, it's like fetch land, go to grab a dual land, hit a basic land. And then just, like, sit there and stare at the monitor with just, like, the most hate possible. Because it's, like, all I needed to do was grab the dual end that I wanted, the shock, and I win this game. But instead, I'm not going to, and I'm going to lose instead. Right. So, yeah.
Great. Just fucking great.
Just fantastic. So, yeah, that's been going on. And, yeah, I've been doing terrible at it. So, I'm hoping I get better. And I'll keep playing, and that's how you do that, apparently. You get better if you keep playing.
Well, that's what they tell you. I don't know if it's true.
I mean, there's playing, and then there's just, you know, playing with yourself. Like, you gotta make sure you're playing against somebody good to get better. I mean, you can't just beat up on Jobins and expect to get better.
Yeah, it's like you can't just play against Tom Martell and then not take the right card and then just pass your turn without playing a land.
Yeah, that's fucking terrible.
That doesn't make you better just because you're playing.
No, it doesn't.
Hello.
Yeah.
It's true. Absolutely true. Jay, everything you say is true.
That's true.
Yeah.
She's pretty smart.
SMRT.
That's also true.
I've definitely suffered from that problem, being like one of the better players at my card store. And now that Alex and John Stern are just traveling to infinite GPs and PTs, it's hard for me to play against someone that's significantly better than me. So it's hard for me to get that type of playing. What?
That'd be so nice for you.
To do what? To never be able to improve?
Be a fucking flathead, yep.
I'll get my stuff out of the way, because I also did a lot of losing.
Good.
I played the face-to-face games, their PTQ, which was sealed, and of course Magic players were known to complain about the limited format constantly, but this is one of the few times where I'm on the same page as most of you, as this is just a tough fucking format. I had a sick deck. I guess in normal times it would be considered sick, because I opened three black rares: Agent of the Fates, Night Howler, and Herald of Torment.
Wow!
So three solid black cards, and
that combo together even.
Right, and you know, two time defeats, like a good black green deck. Very similar. People are like very similar to the two draft decks I had at GP Montreal. So it was very, very solid. Like really good with a good top. And the only thing that was missing was maybe a Nessian Asp. But my first two losses that kicked me out of contention were to blue-white heroic. And one of them just went like turn one, I think it was Loyal Pegasus or Acronian the Hoplite, turn two, the Sky Guard, and then turn four, Eidolon of Countless Battles. And it's just like, I'm looking at my Herald. It's like, I can't do anything. Or Night Howler in my hand, like I can't do anything. And once again, in my second loss, I lost again to deck with Eidolon Countless Battles, but this time this guy also had Fable Hero on top. And so I think I realized that no matter how good my green black good value deck is, it can't beat, like, I didn't have like flying to like protection from flying. I didn't have the 2/4 spider, and even that is kind of slow compared to the flying creatures that the white blue deck can build up, especially with Wingsteed Rider. It can easily become a 3/3 before I even play that 2/4 guy. So I've learned that deck, it's just really good against green black and Eidolon Countless Battles. I just hate them like counting exactly how much I'm gonna eat in the face, because it just seems like a lot. It's like 1+1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, that's an aura. 5, 6, 7. Okay, take 10. I'm like, fuck.
That card is hands down the best limited card in the set, right?
Eidolon of Countless Battles, is it really?
It's rated for sure best in Born of the Gods.
That's so
okay,
ridiculous
yeah.
To me.
Yeah, I would definitely say Born of the Gods. Yeah, probably not.
I think hands down, I think people say hands down Born of the Gods, but it could be the best rare overall, because at format, it's like the bestow is just ridiculous.
Yeah, like for a pack one, pick one, it is definitely, there's nothing you'd pick over it.
Because it's minimum...
Like the Eidolon of Countless Battles is the first pick. There's nothing.
What? Yes, right. The Keldon Warlord with built-in...
Isn't that just a 3-mana 0/0? Sorry, 1/1. But if you have enchantments, then it's bigger, and that's it? That's the whole thing?
No, it's creatures and enchantments.
So you always use it. You always bestow it. You don't always play it as a... You almost never play it as a 3-drop. You always bestow it at 4, so that it's like... It's +2/+2 minimum, right?
Right.
So
and then if they kill your guy, then you just get another guy. That's huge anyway.
Right. And usually on turn 4, you're triggering a heroic already, whether it be like the leader or the Wingsteed Rider. So already like you're making something that's okay even more ridiculous. So it was impossible to race. I think it's missing. The format for me is actually missing just like a Doomblade, I think.
Yeah, that's what I've been saying for.
Yeah, you were right. You were right. Not Furika's Cure that gets out of range. Not like -4/-4 Lash of the Whip that's like 5 mana. And only thing that really kills the guy.
I play Nessian Asp. Oh, sweet. I have no spells that kill that unless I draw the one Sip of Hemlock, which I shouldn't even be playing, because every deck just doesn't care about Sip of Hemlock because you're dead before then. Fucking awesome.
And it's like Rage of Purphoros isn't even that good of a card, because it's just 4 damage for 5. Normally, I thought it would, in normal formats, it feels like it's a pretty good deal, and Scry won, but in this format, it's like, fuck. So I lost it to Blue White, and one of Doug P's friend, Doug Potter's friend, actually took it down, Chris Fox. I know some of you might know him. I don't know. I'm not.
I'm acquainted with Fox.
Okay. But this is his second time queuing, so congratulations to him. Ben Moore was in the top eight, so there were some names in the top eight. Philip Garreau, one of Pascal Menard's very close friends, was lost in the finals to Chris Fox. So, I'm going to the Burlington PTQ this weekend. It's really all about opening a really, really strong pool. I think I can look. A lot of pools just look like X2 pools, and just got to get that heroic deck. Because I think, for me, I want to be playing blue. It's the color I've had the most success with, just because it has the most powerful commons. And Sudden Storm just, like, changes the whole game. Like, they could be about to kill you, and then you are able to crack back just because of Sudden Storm, even if you're slightly behind. So if I don't have a super bomby deck, I hope to be strongly in blue with Sudden Storm, Griptide, Trident Tactics, whatever, Voyage's End, all the blue tricks. That's enough. Not like the slow, like Jay mentioned, and I mentioned, like the slow black and red removal. That's not going to cut it. But the cheap blue bounce, or the four mana just to freeze their guys for two turns, that's what you need. So, other than that, I've been doing a lot of losing. Sadly, I would much prefer to fly to Phoenix to play Standard. But it would have cost. Actually, it wouldn't cost that much.
Well, how much was it for the guys to fly out there? Like six, seven, eight? Like,
yeah, it wouldn't be too bad. I think what really hit me was like the 7 hours of flight. I'm like, that's not. I'm not fucking doing that. Plus paying that much.
Yeah.
But outside of that, with the needing to avenge myself from GP Cincy, I really wanted to go, especially with them. But no, I'll avenge myself next weekend in going to GP Philly. But I know, Scott, I was checking out your stream. You were crushing it instead.
Yeah. Reduke did it again. Mm-hmm. That's all I can tell you. I was playing on... So there was a Star City Games Invitational that happened this past weekend. And if you guys didn't pay attention to it, then that was a mistake. But let me tell you, absolutely just crazy. Reed had been talking about Jund for quite a while, right? And he'd been kind of like playing Jund monsters, but taking it more towards the, like the mid-range Jund build. So playing cards like Thoughtseize and full four packs of like Heroes Downfall and Abrupt Decay and such. And, so what he ended up doing was he realized like, what am I doing? Playing all these cards that are red, like I'm basically playing red for Stormbreath Dragon, and then even then I'm cutting it. So why not look at other color options? So he ended up going and looking at white, and he found one that was really, really good. And he ended up just building this deck and was playing like Obsidats and Elspeths, and it looks super sweet. And so I thought I would pilot it because like anything Reed Duke does in the mid range category is basically right up my alley. And I freaking loved it, man. It was amazing. And so I decided I was going to sleeve it up, play it on stream. And I went like 6-0 with this deck at 2 minutes. So the deck's really good. There's a couple flex slots. I mean, Reed, obviously, and the way he sideboards with it is pretty good. And whether the meta adapts. But like I bashed Black-Red Devotion twice. I beat Niagara. I beat Bug, which is basically like Bug midrange. Ashiok is actually a tough card to deal with. I mean, you got, like, 4 Abrupt Decays and 4 Heroes Downfalls, but, like, it demands an answer, otherwise you fucking lose to it. I guess, what else did we play? What else did we play that night? Black-White? And, I don't know, something else. But it was crazy. It was just such a good time, and playing the deck was so much fun. And I'm actually really looking forward to this week when I get to play Black-White mid-range. Because, like, Elspeth is absurd, and, Obsidat's crazy. So I'm just thinking that perhaps what's going to happen is I'm going to find myself in this situation where I'm spoiled by the fact that I've got all these green, like the removal is actually better in this deck than in mono black. Like, does that sound stupid?
No.
right? But I'm just wondering if maybe this is the better deck. I don't know, but I'm really looking forward to finding out. So it's gonna be pretty cool.
So did you play a lot of? Sorry if I missed it. A lot of mono black with junk on Tuesday rather.
Nope, not mono black.
Okay.
But I mean, I play black red, and I feel like I'm probably better.
Okay.
In that situation.
I played just 1-2 man last night and ran into the Reed Duke list, and I just quickly scanned the list again and realized that because it doesn't play Bioblade or whatever, I just in the two games that I beat him, I just went Pack Rat and killed him.
Yeah.
And I think that might, that's where I feel comfortable as a mono black player against Reed Duke's list. And a lot of, he has a lot of green white guys, which make my Lifebane Zombies pretty damn good, I think.
Yeah, and it's nice because that's absolutely true. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you get these unique board states that you can create sort of post, and maybe the mono black matchup is a little bit worse.
Well, it depends. If they're going Lifebane Zombie, that's worse, and if they know to play their Pack Rats and go all in on Pack Rats, then that's the worst.
Yeah.
But if they kind of go in the direction that other people are going, or, you know, they're staying with the Night Vale Spectres and stuff like that, I think your matchup's, really strong.
Yeah. I haven't really found, the Lifebane Zombies aren't really that big of a deal. You've got enough sort of return back in terms of the discard and stuff that you can very often sort of, if you save it and time it properly, you can protect your bombs fairly well. So that was something that I found nice. And plus the removal being better, you really didn't really fear any of the creatures. The turn two, turn one Thoughtseize, turn two Pack Rat is pretty fucking devastating if you don't have double removal. How many decks out there aren't that way? A Supreme Verdict deck, and that's about it.
Yeah, that was the mono black play of choice.
Yeah.
If you had the Thoughtseize, you had the two land, you had the Pack Rat, that was a sneak.
Yep.
That's what Marcel Zafra did for a whole season.
Yeah. So I don't know, man. It was a lot of fun. All I can tell you is it was right up my alley after playing Monsters for so long and Monsters just being a pile of fun. And it is. this one was a nice refreshing change to be able to actually have information and stuff was pretty sweet. And overall I was just really happy with it.
That's the thing. You just play Burn, and the only information that matters is what's your opponent's life total.
Yeah. Yep, that too. So
is it getting gross that the Burn deck is actually a thing? And did you see the crazy tech that they were playing in Japan?
Oh, with the fucking black, the staff of the Black Magus or something?
The M14 staff?
Yeah, and you, was it Yuya Watanabe? Who was it that won the tournament?
Watanabe. What a sicko.
Yeah.
How good is the staff? I guess I'd actually have to play it.
What staff?
If you play a black spell, gain a life, or if you play a swamp, gain a life.
Oh.
So I guess the Japanese metagame is very similar to the Magic Online metagame, where everyone plays Burn because it works, and it's cheap.
Okay.
And for whatever reason, they were trying to figure out a way to deal with that deck because they felt like the deck was very strong right now, and they came up with the Black Staff, and they played four of them in the sideboard.
So
and apparently
it's interesting
it
because
crushed.
Owen actually made the comment in his article about Mono Black, and he just said that I'm really not sure how a Mono Red deck beats this Staff. And then, sure enough, they play four.
But in the mirror, it's actually not a bad thing because it gives you more cards with your Underworld connections.
Yeah.
So in the strange mid-rangey to control-y type games, you can actually play it out as a way to just keep fueling your card draw, which is interesting. Keeps Mutavault off your back.
I played the Burr matchup, and it was close, so I guess this is enough, obviously enough to push it over the edge for the mono black side. I'm not sure to play it in the mirror.
I don't know, I could see it. Not all four, by no means all four, but a one or two.
I can see something more
to push you into the late game. I just think back to watching you play that mono black mirror in Vancouver. where like you and your opponent were like at no life because you had like drawn right. as many cards as you possibly could and were waiting for one person to be able to kind of like take the edge off the other. And it's like if one of you guys had a staff in that game, it would have been blown wide open.
I think my issue with that would probably be like, then I guess I could see playing Max. Well, obviously you're saying the same thing, Max too, because if they play an Erebos, it just like shuts down the staff completely and all the staffs yeah. they have. So I could see it even more because he's bringing in Read the Bones, yeah. which is a card that I've considered over Erebos because I've mentioned many times how I don't think Erebos has ever been that impressive to me outside of the straight mirror. So it is interesting because Read the Bones and with Underworld Connection is going to kill you. So I noticed like he's playing all four Devour Flesh and in the main deck to be able to like sack a demon to gain lots of life back. So, you know, pretty tight list and probably one that I would definitely try out if I were testing for an event, because I don't think, again, I'm not convinced about all the splash versions at all yet. That's my take.
Sure played Red Splash.
None of them did well, man. Okay, they did reasonably well. Watanabe won with a straight version, man.
Yes, he did. So, what else happened for Magic? Jay, you mentioned you may have played some Cube.
Yeah, we started playing Cube on Sundays instead of store drafting because the format's garbage. So, yeah, so that's been fun. It's also led to like the people that do the store draft are the old guys that like to draft generally a lot, and so it's good because like they're good drafters, but sometimes it's bad because like it means they have a lot of feedback on the cube and like they're very typical old Magic players. So it's sometimes difficult to process their feedback because their feedback delivery system is terrible. But it's good. It's been leading to some positive changes anyway. And it's super fun. I find, though, that sometimes when you... Like, Cube's funny. You want to play... Like, for me, anyway. Like, I want to play Cube constantly. All the time. And I'm, like, always on Cube Tutor drafting. And I'm always thinking and talking about Cube and whatever, right? But I feel like if you play Cube a lot with the same people, it gets really stale really quickly.
Yeah, I guess because everyone's got their natural disposition.
And you hear the same complaints from the same people, and they all draft the same decks and things like that. Like, so it can get kind of boring, similar to like how if you... like for me personally, I don't think I would ever play like a 360 cube or like a cube that could be exactly drafted by the number of players I'm playing with, because I just feel like it would be just be really like boring, right? It's like, oh, did you draft this deck? No. Oh, okay, well, sweet, I guess. You know, I guess. Oh, did you draft any deck? Like, well, I started to try to draft this, and then I tried to draft this, and then no, and then oh, okay, well, great, I guess. You just don't have a deck? You know what I mean? Like, that just seems kind of shitty.
Yeah.
I mean, it was pretty fun. I was going to go to FNM, but something interesting that happened at my local FNM. FNM at my local gaming store used to be free. And okay. So it was like 2 or 3 years ago, it was $5 to play. And they mm-hmm. put all that money in the prize pool. And then they had a very high payout in terms of, like, their payout wasn't flat. It was a lot of it went to, like, the winner type of thing. So okay. it was good because, you know, if you were a good player, then you ended up, sometimes you could, like, get, like, 40 or 50 bucks out of an FNM, right? And this was good for, for that reason. It was good because, you know, because the prize was higher than a regular FNM, most of the good players would go there, and the better players would go there. So, you know, then you also, it was good because you had, a good group of guys. It was also good because you had a challenge, right? Like, nobody wants to, if you're trying to get better anyway, nobody wants to just play against the same old crappy guys over and over again. You want to try to do better here and there kind of thing. So, that was, like, those were the good things. The bad things, though, I guess, were because it was all sharks and it was all spikes, like there, this was during like the Cobblade era, so it was like it was pretty bad in terms of like if you ever wanted to play anything else, it was just all you were playing was Cobblade. That was it.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then some of the newer players didn't like that you could go 3-1 and not make prizing because there was enough 3-1s and 4-0s that, you know, there just wasn't enough prizing for you. Like you were ninth or whatever at 3-1 and they didn't like that and things like that. So they changed it to be free, which was awesome. How awesome is free? It's fucking super awesome. And then they still put in a bunch of money for the, they still put in like a super bunch of money for the prize pool. So that ended up being really great. And then, you know, so you'd go, you'd play some FNM, you'd probably get some money and then, you know, whatever. But then, I guess for some reason that is changing now. And so now what they've done is they've made it, I guess it's, I think it's $10 to play now, which seems high to me to play an FNM. But they've flattened out the prize pool. So now it's like as good as 2-2 will prize, which like to me just, and again, like I haven't been there. I don't really know the whole, like I haven't been to one yet to see how it is, but it just feels to me like they've lowered the, like, basically the prize quite a bit because you're paying $10, but if everybody all the way down to 2-2 is getting prize on average there's 40 people at this FNM, it feels like first place would still be like only say $17 or $20, and you pay $10 for that, which is like, so you're doubling your money, but you know it's for 4 or 5 hours of work, you know.
Kind of how our store is that they've got like constructed, it's $10. They pay prizes to 2 and 2 and better. The prizes aren't super top heavy or at all. So, you know, it's definitely promotes people coming out. Friday Night Magic is always draft. And when we draft, it's like there is, it's pack per win and pack if you don't win.
One pack if you don't win at all?
Yeah. You get the pity pack.
Oh, okay.
See, so for FNM, like constructed around our area, it's like it's divided up as to whether or not you want to play modern or standard.
Okay.
I mean, there's some places that do draft and all that sort of stuff, and that's fine, and, you know, whatever. And I don't really have a lot to say about those, because they're, I think they're like $15 drafts, and then whatever the prize structure is, like, I fucking know. But as far as, like, standard goes, like, you pay $5, and you get in, and I think they pay out to, like, top 4. So, I mean, even maybe top 6, maybe top 8 if there's, like, 40, 50 people. But so even then, if that's the case, I mean, like, first prize is still going to make, like, a good chunk of change, right? Right. And then in the modern, it's the same thing, right? So the payouts stay high, but, I mean, with the added entry fee, the idea is that if you're playing modern, you're playing a more high yield. Like, you want more bang out of your buck, right? Because all the cards are more expensive. So the idea is, like, you'll pay more to play with them, but you'll get sweeter prizes. So, you know, whereas top prize might be $60-$65 on standard, like, it could reach as high as, like, $100-$130 in terms of credit on first place for modern.
Right.
So, I don't know. Like, I understand the idea that they want to collect money to pay. Like, it's a pay-to-play privilege.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm fine. I'm somewhat fine with that. I mean, considering that it started, like, it's always hard to go from having something for free to having to pay for it. And to go from having it as $5 to $10 now is a little bit difficult as well. Do you know what I mean? But, like, I'm fine. I'm not, it's not so much that I don't like that it's a pay structure, but what I don't like is that they've gone from a free flat pay to a paid, like, flatter pay. Because Choo Choo didn't get prizing before, and now they do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so now, I don't know,
like,
if I'm
now
okay
it's
with
like,
that.
Please pay us, you know, X amount of dollars, but also that's going to go to help more people. And like I said, I haven't really had an opportunity to talk to anybody about it, really. They, like, the guys that work at the store don't want to really have a real conversation about it. And I don't say that to mean, like, they're just, like, they're not interested in talking about it, but just, it was a decision that's made by the owner. And, I mean, Mike's, like, a great business guy, and
yeah.
So I'm sure that it's, like, a really great idea. Like, I'm sure that he is doing the right thing, because he is very smart with this. He's a super businessman. So I'm not so worried about that. But I just don't know, like, kind of what the reasoning behind it is, because Phoenix, like I said, has always kind of been the competitive store, and Mike's always been the guy that's like, if you don't like that people are winning with Cobblade, then beat them, like, build a deck that beats Cobblade, and too bad. And if you don't like the price of foils, too bad. And if this card's cheaper online, then too bad. And those are all, like, non-casual things. not because casual players are bad or stupid or whatever, but just that they have different values than, say, Marcel or I or Grinders or the KIT and stuff would, right? Like, so it's just odd to me that he would change to having a paid prize structure, and then also that it's, like, it's not only paid, but also flatter. And then the other thing that is kind of weird, have you guys ever heard of vicinity points?
No.
I'm not sure if it's, like, a local thing only. Or
I know. Yeah, it's but, like one of those. It's a loyalty card system, but it's not like tied to one store. It's like a group you can join. So if you have a local business, you can join into this loyalty program.
Yeah, it's like a third party.
Yeah.
Like Aero Miles or something similar, I guess. Like it's something like that. Like that's close to that, right? It's kind of like I don't know, like Petro Points, but instead of being for Petro, it's like anybody who wants to buy into that can. So this is the other thing. The payout has also been changed from money to vicinity points.
Okay.
So what? I don't know what vicinity points are. Like, I don't know how they work. I don't know why I would want them. I know the only other business I know that has them is, like, Papa John's.
Oh, well, there you go. You get pizza. Win Magic, get pizza.
I hate Papa John's pizza. But, like, I don't know why they made that decision either. I'm not sure what the benefit is. And I don't know at the last time that I talked to them about this, we didn't know what the conversion on vicinity points to dollars was either. So if you're winning, say, like, I don't know if you're winning, like, are you winning 100 points per dollar? Are you winning 5 points? Like how does it work? You know what I mean? So I don't really know kind of if that's a good idea or not either, because I can't really, like, what can I spend my vicinity points on? Whereas at least before, like, I don't know, I guess I was winning credit, which is great because I'm at the store, I'm buying stuff at the store, I'm winning prizes from the store that I played at, so it, like, is kind of a loyalty program in itself. So I don't really know why they switched to vicinity points.
Did you get the new X-Wing Aces pack?
No, I haven't decided if I want to actually buy that or not yet.
Hmm. You know, I have an idea as to why Mike is doing this change.
Okay.
Because there was actually a little bit of news on the storefront side of things.
On, like, the Phoenix storefront, you mean?
Well, on not Phoenix in general, but, like, Magic stores in general.
Really?
I don't know how many people know, but, like, your allocations of, like, From the Vault sets and all that kind of stuff is based on what your, like, Wizards Play Network, I think is what it's called, what your store level's at. So, like, they have a core and then they have an advanced.
Yeah.
Well, they just launched Advanced Plus.
Oh.
So they've got a new level on the top of it that if you get to there, you get more allocations of all that crazy stuff. You get more Friday Night Magic promos and stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
So you think that, and to get that, you just have to have more people, or how does it work?
Well, okay, so for Advanced, which is like the highest level you could get right now, you had to run at least 20 events a year. You had to get like 20 new players sign up in your store a year. You had to have at least an event of 32 players. And then I think you need to have, like, throughout all of your tournaments, you had to have like 100 unique people playing your tournaments. So the Advanced Plus, you have to run 125 events in a year. You have to get 50 new players sign up at your store. You need to have a 50-person tournament, and you need to have 250 unique players. So as much as, like, when you're having, like, these awesome prizes that are going to, like, the top players and you're drawing the top players into your store, you're not doing anything to get yourself the awesome product that you can sell for good money and that'll draw, you know, customers to your store. And the best way to do that is you got to level out to try and draw more people.
But, like, so we feel like the reason is because, like, but, like, okay, so, but if Mike's FNMs are regularly, like, 45 people and up, and there's 2 FNMs a day.
Yeah. He probably hits the events, he probably hits the numbers for the events, but
yeah,
even at our store where we get, like, a lot of people and they run events, I think they run events 5 nights a week now.
Yeah, that's what, basically sort of what Phoenix does, yeah. But yeah.
The new player signups is actually, like, a tough number to hit. Like, that 50 number is actually a tough number, and the 250 unique players. So that was part of the reason why, like, Warp in Edmonton made that decision to kind of level out, because they wanted to make sure that they were always hitting their advanced numbers and that they were drawing in enough new players all the time. So they found that when they were giving out prizes to everybody, then guys who, you know, played at the kitchen table who were afraid to go to tournaments felt like they could go to tournaments because, you know, they got their participation badge at the end of the day. So if you're trying to hit your advanced plus numbers, then, you know, you've got to keep going that. And if you don't have that policy embraced, like, it's a good time to go out there. What I would almost say, like, even I was thinking about it when you were talking, it's like talking to Mike and saying, hey, we run two Friday Night Magics. Why don't we have the, you know, the 8-4 queue and the 4-3-2-2 queue? You know, because they already do it in two, they already do two events. Yeah. So it's like, have the shark pool and have the non-shark pool.
That's probably a good enough idea, but the other thing with Mike is that he doesn't really like to take other people's advice.
Oh, sorry. The warp stores are Mike.
Yes. Oh, okay.
Warp 3 is run, the Magic's run by a Mike. Warp 2 is by a Mike.
Oh.
Warp 1 is not by a Mike, but it used to be by a Mike, but he was a bad Mike, so
and
they
Phoenix
got
Phoenix is also a Mike? That's hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. Alberta Magic is run by Mikes.
Nice.
So, yeah, that might be it, like the Advanced Plus, because from what I understand, like that, if you hit your Advanced Plus, you get more of the limited product. Like, it affects what your allocation is for things like pre-releases and all that kind of nonsense. The stuff right. where, like, Canadian stores already struggle.
It's like, this is... That could be the thing. But the thing is, too, is that Mike sells his pre-releases away because he doesn't want to run them.
Yeah.
Because they're, like, a big nightmare for him to run.
Yeah, I know that it's tough for the Warp guys, but, like, I think that what Kelly's doing in Toronto is going to trickle down eventually. Like, I wouldn't be surprised to see it in Calgary. I wouldn't be surprised to see it in Edmonton, where we start to have, like, these regional pre-release things again, where a few stores get together and rent out a hotel room and go nuts, or a hotel, like, conference room. So. And especially, like we have three Warp stores in Edmonton, and they all have big turnouts for their events and stuff like that, and they're going to be running the PTQ, and, like, their Friday night, they're doing 6 F&Ms at the event location, at the event site.
Holy fuck, that's crazy.
Yeah, they're doing, like, 2 drafts, a legacy, or a modern, a standard. No, it's 5. And I can't remember what the other one is, but they're giving out a San Diego Comic-Con Planeswalker to the winner of each event.
Wow.
So, like, they're having, like, a really cool thing right before the Edmonton PTQ. And, like, that's the type of thing where it's, like, you can kind of almost cheat in a sense. Like, if you needed, oh, you got some new players, well, let's slide them over to this store, you know? Like, oh, let's convince them to go into this event. So, like, if they keep doing big events like that where it's like, okay, you know, 2's hit its quota, 3's hit its quota, but Warp 1 hasn't hit its quota, what can we do, you know, promoting through the other stores to kind of push players towards them? Which is sneaky, but that would be the smart way to do it. So if you're listening, Mike, do that.
Mike. If you're listening, Mike, do that.
Yeah. So yeah, that's a neat thing. Hopefully it just means there's more from the vaults and we don't have to pay $250 for them.
Well, hopefully, but I think we still will. It's like the Modern Masters just increasing the price of cards, really.
Yeah. I guess if you add, you know, another 50 people to the equation every year,
that's the thing, right? It's like, yeah, there's more from the vaults, but there's more, they can just claim there's more demand as well, you know?
Yeah. Brutal.
Beautiful.
So yeah, so like, I mean, that's kind of what's going down in my neck of the woods. I don't know if I'm really going to play FNM anymore. I really, one of the big, if not only reasons I was playing FNM before was because it was free. You know, I mean, like having to go to an F&M and hang around with people and be in an area that's, like, hot and sweaty and gross for free is tolerable, but for $10, I don't think it is.
Well, are there other stores that are better?
No.
Okay.
No. Hands down, Phoenix is the best store.
So, I have never, ever, ever heard of free F&M prior to you mentioning it.
We have Warp 3 in Edmonton does free F&M.
That's
their prizes
crazy.
Are just
Phoenix,
the promo.
Yeah, like Phoenix has been doing it for like two years. That's what I mean. Like part of the reason that Phoenix is the best store is because they had free F&M including cash prize.
Yeah, like the store what? I go to might as well be free, like, because it they don't keep any money. Like everything is done at cost. So you get like a lot of packs coming out of there. Even though it's like blown out. Like if you win F&M, I think you get like 10 to 12 packs. And, you know, that's with pity packs going to everybody. So,
wow.
Yeah, like, they do good.
Huh.
Yeah, and like I said, like, free F&M, when I would go, it's like, so you get, if you go 4-0 at F&M, you're generally getting, like, $20 or so.
Yeah.
Like, that's, for me, that's fine. I'll go to an FNM for free and sit around and be in that area for $20. You know what I mean? That'll buy me a cube foil or two.
You'd play Theros Limited for 4 hours for $20?
Fuck no. Fuck no. But I'm not playing Theros Limited. I'm playing Standard, and I get to play 24 one-drop mono red.
That's right. You guys, see, that's a part that I can't get my head around, because the one that is at Warp 3, the free one, is, like, Standard, but I'm so used to this being a draft town. Like, I think that's the only non-standard FNM in the city.
Oh, wow.
Or non-draft FNM, I should say, so.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I don't know. In Calgary, like, the draft happens on, like, Sunday night. I mean, Sundays during the day.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, in Toronto, there's most of the people run both. That's like, they'll be limited or constructed. Yeah. And, like, they'll run them side by side.
As far as I know, every FNM in Calgary is a constructed format.
Yeah.
Like, Sentry Box, I don't... Actually, Sentry Box might be draft, because Tuesdays is their, like, Tuesday night magic. So, yeah. Sentry Box might be draft, but everywhere else that I know of is standard.
It's like Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday is, like, the constructed nights in Edmonton, and the whole weekend is draft.
Wow.
We draft Friday night, we draft Saturday, we draft Sunday.
That's crazy.
All we do is draft.
What?
That's crazy.
I'm fully convinced KYT is actually just practicing with his soundboard and that he's not actually speaking.
Fucking stupid.
Oh my god, KYT, you know what's fucking sweet?
$20 pre-releases at facetofacegames.com.
You know what? Well, you know what is sweet? Is that the pre-release weekend is my birthday weekend.
Whoa!
Happy birthday, you get a set.
Wow, that's exciting.
Here's to hoping they fix it.
Yeah, seriously. I bet they don't. Ha ha ha, stupid.
What if
you guys want to talk about garbage spoilers?
Are there any?
No, I mean, no, but there's pictures of a Johnny, and then everyone's like, oh, I got a green white at Johnny!
So I gotta tell you, he is gonna be green white. I'm actually pretty excited about, like, green white at Johnny, black green god, white black god, and blue green god.
We can talk about what we think the gods are gonna do.
Really?
Well, I mean, it's not super interesting, but it's... I mean, you gotta play the game, I guess, right?
I guess so, right?
Podcasters, and there's a new set. We better fucking talk about that garbage.
Pointless speculation?
Well, here, there are some things that were mentioned that are fairly interesting, that are worth actually mentioning.
From the Planeswalker's Guide?
From the Planeswalker's Guide, okay? So when they go through and they talk about each one of the gods, they do kind of make... they comment about some of them. For example, like, the one that doesn't fit is the black white Atheros. So I'm gonna skip him for now. But Keranos, god of storms,
he has the best art though. Hands
who?
Down.
Atheros?
Yeah, the guy that's got, like, the big cane across the river.
Fucking right, he does.
That's fucking titty.
Yeah. So it's neat because, like, you look at Keranos, the god of storms, and he basically, if you read his what they say about him, basically says you're going to either deal damage or fucking draw cards or scry. Like, and he's going to do one or both.
Yeah, it'll be like, though, every time you cast a fucking blue sorcery that has a converted mana cost 5 or higher, scry 2.
Well, it's interesting because it says such individuals earn a two-edged blessing, momentary glimpses of the future, but the inability to change what is to come. So maybe it's just like...
Just scrying?
Sure, maybe it's just look at the top card.
Oh,
and you can't
look.
Change it.
Yeah, just
peek. Well, what would be the red ability in that?
He dispenses insights and blasts of lightning in equal measure.
So it'll be like deal one damage to target creature.
No, it'll be like blast of genius. You, like, flip over the top card of your library and, like, bolt a guy for that.
Maybe. Anyway, so he's going to be something like burn in cards. Burn in library. Farika says that... so here... Farika is a fearsome enemy, but mortals she favors are hard to kill. Farika, of course, is the black-green. She bears a potion cup from which she dispenses drafts that simultaneously strengthen her servants and slay her enemies. So, like, is this going to be almost like a Xenagod, where a target creature gets indestructible and death touch till end of turn?
Yeah, big in death touch.
That seems overpowered, though. Right? Indestructible death touch?
Indestructible, probably, but maybe it's just a buff. Maybe Jeremy's
+2/+2.
Yeah. Or maybe just like, maybe just in the butt, maybe not in the front. Maybe it's death touch and like plus
death touch is enough because like you have so much trample already.
Yeah.
You can find trample. You can trample umple. Could you imagine like Farika and Xenagod in like a gen list?
Yeah.
Trumple rumple.
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
See, this is the problem that I have right now, is that we know that they're not going to make all five gods good.
No.
We know that.
So which one's the bad one?
The blue-red one? The blue-red one and the black-white one will probably be garbage.
Ooh, I can't see the black-white one.
I think the red-white one's going to be terrible.
Oh, yeah, probably. Yeah. That's a pretty bad color combination, I guess.
Unless they make it cheap.
Oh, yeah, if it's like three mana or something.
That would be sick.
And then it's got to do something. I don't know what it would do, but...
He's yeah, like, going to be four like mana.
It'll be like, what, like creatures you control get lifelink or something? Like,
well, he governs both personal valor and bravery in battle. He's the twin to Mogus, God of Slaughter, who commands the dark and brutal side, so and the two spar constantly. So they're 100% going to be either like mirrors of each other, but he's absolutely red-white too.
What does Mogus do? It's like sack a guy and...
Or take two.
Or take two.
Two? That's so it. Yeah, he'll be like gain two life. Or
gain two life, give all your guys vigilance.
Yeah. Something.
Oh, that's shit.
That's why he's the bad one.
But Krufix sounds. I think Krufix has the biggest potential. I think
I'm so jacked for that. That's my favorite color combination. That's going right in the cube.
Yeah, the most enigmatic of gods, Krufix has dominion over the potential, the distant, and the unseen. Thus, he is seen as an oracle of dreams. He also governs navigation, mystery, and the cycles of time.
Ramp, time walk,
anyone? Time walk.
Turbo fog?
Just fog all day, every day.
So, it's going to be pretty sweet. I'm excited to see what happens. Like, these gods I'm actually excited for. After seeing how, like, mediocre these ones were in this set, like, none of, like, some of the gods are like, they're decent, right? They're all, like, reasonable.
Green white one makes me want to vomit, though.
Like, it has application. They're just not standard based, right?
So, well, even the green white one is not very good when you consider that it costs five. Like, what do you need to ramp to after you've ramped up to that and then done nothing on your turn?
Well, that's the thing. It's a card that could be good if it was in a different set.
Or if it costs three or four, even.
Yeah.
Like, even a Pharah, even a Pharah is a better, like, a better card than that. And it's, like...
Well, Pharah ended up being, like, you know, one of the top two in the set, so... Like, it was that and Xenagod.
Yeah, I mean, Xenagod number one, not close, right? I mean, that guy is ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, literally nearly unbeatable.
Oh, man, and also, did you, like, of course you did, but the only interaction I've ever had with Xenagod is that I have a Russian one in my cube, because I'm stupid. And, so I was playing this is the other thing that kind of, like, that bugs me all the time about my fucking cube group that I play with constantly. If I fuck up and I want to do a take these back, they're like, absolutely not, no. No, take these back. And then if they fuck up and do a take these backsies and I'm like, no, they'll bitch about that forever. They'll be like, well, I would have killed you. I would have killed you because I would have done this. Like, well, whatever. You didn't let me do take these back. But then you're that guy. So basically what happens is I never get take these backsies. They get take these back every round. But so the reason that this is relevant to the story is because I have a Russian Xenagod and I didn't realize that it was at the start of your combat phase, just pick a creature, because I thought that was too powerful. I thought it was when you play a guy, he gets haste and double.
No!
It's just that, so you can just keep giving the same guy double shit all the time?
Yes.
What the fuck? Yeah, so I had no idea. So there was three turns in a row where I could have killed the guy, and I just didn't. I just decided to just skip that trigger because I didn't play a guy. Yep, sweet. Fucking sweet.
Was that against Mercier?
No. He doesn't like playing my cube because, quote unquote, you have a bad cube.
You have a bad cube.
Yeah. I can get behind that.
Yeah. So I didn't realize that. So Xenagod, obviously, yes, is the number one, hands down. He's too good. He is a very good creature. But, like, there was a turn where I played Xenagod and then untapped and played Ulamog's Crusher.
What?
Seems fair.
16, yeah. 16 haste. Annihilate you, bitch.
Yeah. Like, and then the following turn was like, Terastodon, blow up three of my lands. You're dead, you fucking cards.
Nasty.
Yeah.
That is nasty.
And there's like, and there was lots of turns where I just turn five Xenagod, turn six Primeval Fight. Go. You're dead. I ramped 5 million times. You're dead. You're dead. You're stupid.
But it's like, a little unnecessary.
But like, and then, but again, it was just like every turn, it was like, yeah, untap, play a guy, he gets haste. Oh, sweet. This is great. Not fucking, oh, you could just do it when you have no guys in hand? Oh, rat.
I love that the gimped version of him made it into your cube.
How long?
No, I love the gimped version of him made it into your cube.
Oh, yeah, yeah, the worst version is in the cube, yeah. How fucked is that?
Beautiful.
So this weekend, Phoenix Standard. It is this weekend, right? This is the one that Channel Fireball is running from a coverage standpoint.
Yes. Yep.
So
everyone gets germs.
So what is
And those germs are fucking sweet. If any listeners are going to Phoenix and can get me a germ, that would be so awesome. I would love you for it. Except for, is that the promo?
No, the promo is Batterskull.
That's
why they made germ to go with it.
I was going
to
say, that makes sense, but like, what a jip if it's like, oh yeah, the promo for all the other GPs is Batterskull, so this promo is a germ for you.
No, they're going one step higher. They're going, hey, we can't give you a
double
Batterskull, giving you a germ.
Double promo. Yeah, if anyone can get me a germ, that'd be sweet. Anyway, Scott was talking about something.
Well, I understand that coverage is going to be done by Huey, LSV, and who?
Is it Chion?
I mean, it might be, but I don't think it's
usually Chion. It's like Chion, Sperling.
I think Sperling's part of it.
Yeah, I know Huey is for sure, which I think is fucking extra awesome.
Because I don't
really
have a lot of familiarity with his coverage.
What's that?
I don't have a lot of familiarity with his coverage.
No, it doesn't matter. So he did a video, his first video. I think it's his first video for Channel Fireball that went up today. And it's him and Shahar Shanhar doing, like, Standard Esper.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I see.
And, like, he was hilarious. And, like, just hang out with the guy. He's hilarious. So I'm actually very excited. Not only, you know, is he extremely knowledgeable, but I think, like, he and LSV could go deep. Go real deep in coverage, and it'd be pretty sweet.
The Brumaz playmat looks pretty badass, too.
It does. I do want one of those, even though I don't really play with playmats anymore.
I got a guy who can hook you up.
Sweet.
Yeah, Gishadi, actually, you know, everyone knows.
Oh, man. Sweet.
He's got a hookup because he's like an avid playmat collector.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, he's like actually going to wallpaper like a room in his house in playmats. And he's very close to being there.
Poor choice. But,
he can do whatever he wants.
That's true. He can do whatever
he wants. He's
grown. He's grown?
He's grown.
He's grown.
Yeah, you ever watch like what's that guy, the old white guy who has all the people on his show and they're all yellow?
What's that old white guy who has all the people on his show there? You know, that old
Maury
white
Povich.
Guy.
Maury Povich.
Hey, Pavel.
Bring on, like, I can't believe that he's still doing the show. He's
old. He'll bring on the 17-year-old girl with the mother, and the 17-year-old girl has like 6 kids already.
Yeah,
and she thinks she's got the world all figured out. And the mom is
still gonna give you a baby.
You can't be with the boys, and she's like, "I'm grown. So I can do what I want.
I'm grown.
Yeah. So I say that to my wife every now and then. Like, if I decide I want to have ice cream for breakfast, I'm grown.
That's right. You can have cookies whenever you goddamn want, boy.
Fuck right.
I can't believe that show's still on.
I can't believe it's on, and it's just the same show every time now. Like, it was awesome before when it was like, this is Martha. Martha's afraid of olives. You're like, what? Nobody's afraid of olives. And then Maury's like, you know what we'll do? We'll get a guy dressed up as an olive, and we'll bring him out. And then you're like, what the fuck, Povich? This is fucked, man.
Reach into the cushions of your chair. Olives!
Olives! And then she just loses her shit and, like, just basically dies on stage. And Povich is like, yeah, next up we have a lady who's afraid of shoelaces. Look what I'm wearing. Ah, like, it's just fucking, like, it's how is that show still on?
Coverage this weekend is LSV, William Jensen, and Matt Sperling.
There you go. Yeah, it's going to be good.
Trifecta, even.
Yes. There will be a pun.
The guy on Twitter that makes jokes about everybody?
Which one?
He the guy on Twitter making
the Matt Sterling? Yeah, the guy who like interviewed Crack Guy, and he does the I'm Sick of It columns.
Oh, I didn't know that. Man, I should read that interview. Was it good?
It was actually a decent interview.
Oh, sweet.
I would have loved it, Scott, if it was Chion, because he's hilarious with LSB.
Yeah, yes. I agree. You watch their Cube streams, and it's something else.
Yeah,
I think tonight they're going to be doing some more Paul Chion tries to play legitimate Magic, and LSV does everything he can to sabotage him. Which is like how their stream works, and it's awesome.
Yeah, I really enjoyed watching Chion when he was just getting up and started with the streaming. And, I mean, he's got a good personality, he's really good at the game, and, he's a joy to watch, for sure. Having him and LSV on, and LSV trying to incessantly sabotage him basically takes... It's like having your ice cream and chocolate syrup on it.
Yes.
So. Because you're grown.
Only knows how to draft, like, blue-white. And, like, LSV always gets him into mono-red.
Yeah.
Because you're grown.
It's grown. It's
grown.
You do what he wants.
You do what you want. It grown.
Gene Tarski, you are not the father.
But you are afraid of olives. And we have some olives! So funny, too, because Pavich always runs to the back and is like, it's okay, it's fine, it's fine, it's okay. Look, they're just olives. Look, 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 look. And you're like, Pavich, man. Like, this, what the fuck? Like, and then they
consider
always,
the room, buddy. Consider the room.
They always find the worst people, too. They're not just like, oh, she's afraid of olives, so she just doesn't eat those. No problem. It's like, she's afraid of olives, but she works at an olive factory, and it's ruining her life.
And every time she touches an olive directly, she defecates herself all over the floor.
Yeah, which
but she
is really
can't
difficult.
Help but love the smell.
That's right.
Like it's like, you know, it's like she can't go to restaurants because they have olives there. Oh. Well, what about
how old do you think Maury is?
He's got to be like fucking 60.
No, no.
What do you mean no?
Over, man.
He's over 60?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Dude, his wife, Connie Chung.
Connie Chung, yeah,
is 67.
What?
I love we're talking about Maury Povich.
It's pretty sweet, actually.
This is why we're fifth.
Okay, wait. How old do you think Jerry Springer is?
Oh, is he alive?
That guy's like 70 for sure, right?
Literally 70. So is Maury older or younger than Jerry?
Older.
Oh my god, he has to be older if his wife's 67. Right?
Yep.
Right, yeah, correct.
I'm going to go for a full magic deck, 75.
Oh.
80?
No.
80? Is he 80?
No, he's not 80. Jer got it right on the head. He's a bang on 75.
75?
Bam, with sideboard.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
You said
holy
60.
Shit. That is ridiculous. Yeah.
You know what's worse than that? Sally Jesse Raphael, 79.
She's alive?
Not dead yet.
That's not
true. I'm with Jay on this one.
That's not true. Someone lied to you.
That's I was shocked when I found out Maury was 75 when I looked it up.
Man, fucking Maury.
He's still active, like, on the show. He's still doing it
it's
every
crazy.
Day.
Well, I mean, like, it's not like Connie Chung's done anything in 20 years.
Yeah, man. I remember when I found out that Connie Chung was his wife, and I was like, man, Connie Chung! And then now you can't say that to people because they're like, who? Yeah, like, right on, that guy married an Asian. Sweet, he's old and white. Here's the thing that's interesting. So I put Mogus in the cube. Mogus and Zenigod are the only two gods in the cube.
Okay.
And
how were they?
Okay, so this is the thing. Zenigod is retarded, but for some reason he's not really getting drafted a whole lot. And I think the reason is because I don't have a dedicated red-green deck. What I have is a lot of Naya aggro, like, gets drafted, or red X aggro gets drafted. But red-green is not a deck that I have. So I was like, okay, well, how do I make that a deck? And then I just don't know the answer to that question. Because, it just seems to me that all the cards that I would want in a red-green aggro deck would be in my queue, but for some reason they're, like, nobody's drafting, or, sorry, not red-green aggro, red-green, like, monsters deck. They're all in the queue, but people, like, but they're not, like, people aren't drafting them for some reason. You know what I mean?
So you've got Domri, right?
Yeah, Domri's in there, yeah.
And you have Xenagos the Reveler?
No, I don't. But, I mean, he doesn't seem like he's that great for a monster deck. He just
He's got some good ramp to him. But, like, what are some traditional red-green monsters card? Like, what cards put you into red-green?
You want monsters or you want aggressive strategies, though, right?
Well, the aggressive strategies are already there, right? Like, all the red aggressive cards are already there. So I'm thinking, like it's not so much monsters, but it's things like I said, Xenagod, for some reason, doesn't have a deck, it appears. So...
What about that red-green haste thing that has Wither? The Goblin War Sled or something?
Boggart Ramgang?
Yeah, I have one of those in there. It doesn't get
Bloodbraid Elf
very often. Because it's triple red. Right? It's triple red or triple green, so it doesn't...
Yeah, but that, like, those are the types of cards that force people into red-green strategies. Like, you know, it's a strong enough card.
Yeah, I don't want to force people to play red-green. I just want red-green to be playable.
So Bloodbraid Elf obviously is in your queue.
What's that, sorry?
Bloodbraid Elf obviously is in your queue.
Yeah, obviously, yeah.
Are you making it too easy for people to play Naya?
Well, probably, but I think it's more so that it's like, it's not that it's too easy to play Naya, but it's just that, like, Naya aggro is just good. Like, why would you play monsters when you could play, you know, turn one dude? Does that make sense? I don't know.
Do you need, like, more things like, what is that, 2 mana 0/5 that you can add green to your mana pool?
Like Wall of Roots?
Yeah, Wall of Roots, like, things like that to, like,
the other problem is, like, I have things like that, but the problem is, like, so it's a very... This is the thing. I think that I'm missing the margin between... I'm missing the margin between, like, aggro and then just ramp. Because Wall of Roots is not a mid-range card, like, per se. It is, but at the same time, like, the ramp players will just take it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, because Wall of Roots, just you just go, like, turn one Llanowar Elf, turn two Elf, and a Wall of Roots, turn three, like, Primeval Titan, or anything you want, right? Whereas, like, the mid-range decks will take it, but then it's only adding one mana per turn, so they're only going from, say, 3 to 4, or 4 to 5, or, you know what I mean? Whereas, like, in a ramp deck, because you already have the extra mana, you know, you're going from 3 to 5 instead of 3 to 4, which sort of makes a difference, if that makes sense.
It sounds like the plight of drafting, like, red in, like, a core set, because, like, everybody, like, splashes your removal and splashes your fireball, so you actually get none of, like, the powerful cards, because everyone else is taking them.
Yeah, it's very similar to that, yeah. Like, mono red is a deck, but that's because of, like, the creatures are good, and then you only need a couple pieces of removal, and then you just kind of, you know, you play a 1-drop, then you play a 2-drop, then you, you know, and they have haste, and then you, you know, you finish them off on turn 4 with, like, a fucking... Hero of Oxid Ridge or a Hell Rider or something, right? Into like the 5/5 Hellkite, right?
Yeah.
Something like that. But like, it's like, so I don't know. I just don't know how to make like red-green monsters a deck when it's like, it either just becomes ramp or nothing. So like Xenagos is Xenagod's really good. Mogus I really like, and there's a couple of times where I've opened him and then forced the red-black deck because I think he's really good, but I haven't actually seen him hit play yet, which is unfortunate.
I don't know how I feel about that guy. Like, I would want Sulfuric Vortex or I'd want Abyss. Like, I wouldn't want what he is.
Well, I think he's just really powerful against your opponent, you know what I mean? Like, where they're just like... You're forcing them to sack guys or just draining them. So, and I think you want to play it in an aggressive list. You don't want to play it in a control list. I think
he wants to be the top of your curve, right?
Yeah, so what I mean.
You're basically getting in early. You're playing a bunch of guys, and then you drop him. And like by that time, maybe he actually is himself a guy, right? Yeah. And he's like a fucking 7/5 indestructible on turn 4 or 3 or whatever.
Yeah.
But you know you've already dealt a pile of damage, and then his idea is that you just continue to clock your opponent, right? They either have to like sacrifice blockers that they would otherwise use to stop your guys, or they're just going to take 2 for doing it and then eat, like, he's a fucking abyss by himself because he's attacking for 7.
Yeah.
So I agree. It's definitely an aggressive list that you need to have him in for sure. He needs to be the curve top.
Yeah, like, I think you want to play like he's the guy that you're playing with, like, Painseer and Dark Confidant and whatever, as you're like 1 or 2/4 of, you know what I mean? And everything else is under that, and then you just ranch them, right?
Yeah.
But
But I like, feel like I want like pump knights and all that sort of shit in that deck too, right?
Yeah. And like I said, the thing is, I haven't seen him hit play, but since I've added him in, that deck's been drafted like 4 or 5 times.
Mm.
So, you know, I mean, that's something anyway. You know.
Oh yeah.
So, but I mean, like that's the thing. It's like red black's kind of an interesting deck too, because you know, like you said, like all the best red and black spells are splashable in other decks, and then the cards that are actually red and black are few and far between for actually being like powerful cards. You know?
Hmm.
Like, I can't name probably 5, probably even 10 red-black cards that are super powerful off the top of my head. There's, like, Blightning, Terminate, I guess, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, is Terminate so powerful that you wouldn't just take Doomblade if you weren't solidly black-red, you know? Or go for the throat?
Oh, why
or
wouldn't
Terror?
You take both? Well, so maybe that's it, right? Like, maybe...
I think Dreadbore is worthwhile just because
Dreadbore is. But do you splash for Dreadbore, or do you fucking force red-black for Dreadbore? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's no red-black Planeswalker. There's no Planeswalker that's red and black, like, in terms of flavor.
Do you
like,
put Rakdos in?
No.
Like, is Rakdos a reason?
No, because he's so...
What about Olivia?
Well, Olivia's in there. Olivia's in there. Ooh, so spicy.
Olivia is a reason to play, like, not splash.
Yeah, I suppose. The other one's like, in there, too. The one that's a 4-1 haste, sack a guy to make it indestructible.
Yeah.
That's in there, too.
4-1
but
haste.
But these are all just cards that feel like...
Oh, Aristocrat.
Play them, right? Oh, yeah, sorry, Aristocrat. It just feels like Jund could be playing these cards.
Well, that's fine, but, like, you can say that about any deck, right? Like, maybe... Well, so if maybe that's the case, and maybe your mana fixing is too good. Maybe Jerry has it on the head.
It is very good, and that could be true. The mana fixing is really, really good.
Like, the trick is to, like, reward people for playing the other cards. You know, like, for playing those cards. Like, that's where I was, like, thinking of, like, the Bogart Ram Gang and stuff like that. Like, reward a person for playing red-green by giving them this card that only really works in red-green. Like, maybe you put in, like, the Shadowmoor, like, God, or the Shadowmoor, like, Lords. What's the guy who blows up a land, the Trample guy, the 6/6 Trample guy?
Oh, the Deuce of Calamity. You're talking about, like the Deuce or, and, like, Demigod and all that sort of shit?
Yeah, and like, then there was the one that was, like, it would give, like, the colors, like, it would give them, like, plus something, and they had, like, a weird ability.
Yeah, but those cards are bad. Like, those...
Yeah, probably,
those
but, like...
are bad. And I don't want to just put bad cards in my deck if no one's playing red, green. That's
but, like, yeah, find something like Deuce. Like, give, like...
I used to have the white-black one in.
Okay,
which,
yeah.
Which is a 4/4 flyer with lifelink, and if you have more than, I think, 25 life, then it's an 8/8 flying.
Yeah, the flyer
but
guy.
I used to have that one in, but the problem is, like 5 mana symbols is too much. Like, it just doesn't work. You know what I mean?
But in red green, it does work.
Well,
they're going to take a little bit of your ramp. Like they're going
to. Like nobody wants to play them. I guess is the problem. I guess
so. Draft with different people.
Like nobody wants to get a card that has 5 mana in it. That's like it's just not the answer. Like if you look at any cube online, you'll never find those cards in it for a reason.
Yeah. Well, what is the current Moto Cube doing right for that deck then?
Well, I don't know if it is. I don't know if it's on the Moto Cube. The problem with the Moto Cube, though, is that it's an exact cube that has decks in it.
Yeah.
So if I did that, it would be a lot easier, right? Because you would say, like, this goes in this deck, so this card is in. But because I don't have an exact... Like, I don't like that. I don't like restricting, like, you to drafting that deck. It just becomes, like, a little bit more challenging. And, I mean, maybe... Like, it's very possible the answer is just that, like, there's nothing. Right? Like, it's very possible the answer is just, like, you have the best red-green monster cards in your deck. And because of the way that your cube's built, it's either aggro or ramp because both are so possible that, you know what I mean? Like, the monster's deck just ends up being... It would be fine if you drafted it, but why would you draft it?
Yeah. I see what you're saying.
Maybe you're missing the bridge guys at 3, then. Like, maybe that's where you need to look at, right?
Yeah, that could be.
Like, I mean, you could use... Like, the Fanatic of Xenagos seems like a perfectly serviceable cube card.
The Fanatic of Xenagos? Is that the red one?
He's a 3/3 guy that sometimes, well, when he comes down, he's a 4/4 with haste, or he's a 4/4 permanently.
Yep.
Yeah.
What about BTS? Do you play BTS?
I don't know what that is.
Burning True Shaman?
Oh, no, I don't.
I like that one.
That would be an aggressive card anyway, though. But I've been thinking about playing Burning Tree Shaman. So, you know.
Burning Tree Shaman actually is probably pretty good.
I think it is. I think it's probably good enough.
Yeah.
I think it deserves a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
You know, like a couple weekends of play. See if it's got a spot in the big leagues.
Yeah, I think so, too.
You know, if you just, like, take it out and, like, when you go to pull out all the cards to make the packs, like, take one and make sure that it gets into the packs.
Yeah, I'm not, like, a super fan of doing that because my cube is larger than that, right?
So yeah, no, absolutely. But that's where it's, like, you know, it's like when you do, like, that goldfish testing or you're playing against a guy and you're like, okay, I'm going to take this one card and put it in my 7-card hand just so I get to play a game with, like, this one of random card that could show up just so I have something to, judge it on.
But yes, I know what you mean.
Yeah, but like in a whole draft, like if you're doing like a 6-guy draft type thing like that, like one card kind of fixed, you know, you're going to get an idea of what happens with it. You know, maybe it gets played, maybe it doesn't get played. But at least you can talk to the guys and say, hey, what happened?
Yeah, yeah.
You playing Horned Cavu in your deck or in your cube?
I don't know what that is.
3/4 for green red, and when he comes into play, return a red or green creature you control to its owner's hand.
Ooh.
So it's like a big guy that gates. You playing Rada in your cube? Heir to Keld?
I don't know what that is either.
She's green, one green, one red, 2/2. It's a good one. Yeah, because it likes a mana elf, but when it attacks, you can add red, which is good.
Yeah.
Scab Clan Mauler should be in your cube. It's a 1/1 trample for green red. He's got Bloodthirst 2 from Guild Pact.
Yeah, that doesn't seem very good.
You put Courser in, right?
Courser of Krufix?
Yeah.
He's not in yet. I have to get one, but he will be.
I got stomped by a Doran deck online, a modern Doran deck with Courser, and it was just, like, so hot.
Oh, like, man, speaking of which, I have to go order that fucking custom Vraska right now, because, maybe they don't Vraska. Have it. They don't have it anymore, but the Jace versus Vraska, Vraska.
Oh. Oh, yeah, that'd be a good cute
card. Face-to-Face Games has Vraska for $4 from that set.
There you go.
So, perfect.
Do you know what else Face-to-Face Games has? Some motherfucking sweet-ass Tooks.
Motherfucking sweet-ass Tooks.
I'd check them out.
I would check them out, too.
Absolutely. If I walked into a room and I saw someone wearing one of those Tooks,
I'd buy them a cup of coffee.
Yeah. I'd be like, I don't love you, but I don't know if I need to, you know?
I'd probably say I love you.
Yeah, so Face-to-Face Games, search A-Team, first thing that pops up, buy a Tuke.
Buy a Tuke.
Support the show, everyone that you love us, do the right thing.
Also, if you want more stuff like that, you have to buy this stuff, because KYD is broke.
Yeah.
How do you think we're going to pay for the hoodies that you want? Buy the Tukes first.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's how it works.
I'm also broke, and I would love to be able to buy a hoodie or a Tuke.
Hmm.
We could do play mats. There's all sorts of stuff we can do.
So we're down to under 20 left, right, KYT?
Yeah, yeah. We're getting down there. So time to get your hands on a Tuke.
Do it. Do it up.
Do it. Do it. So KYT, you said you've got something going on this weekend. You got a PTQ?
Yeah, going down to Burlington, had options to go to Ottawa. Burlington just has to be slightly closer, and Ben Klein, who is the TO there, always runs a smooth tournament, and obviously that's always a big plus if you've been...
This isn't the Ice Imports guy, is it?
No. This is... The Burlingtons are usually smaller, but he just gets things going really smoothly, and I've been into terrible ones before, so... I'm fine to go down there, and you know, there's always like, I think the fields are usually too big for it to matter. There's always talk of what's softer in quotes, and obviously Canadians love to think that their PDQs are harder. But
do Canadians think that?
A lot of Canadians do think that.
Oh, I didn't know that.
But
I know that some of like the U.S. PTQs that are closer to us that are not in Washington State are considered soft.
I think that's... is that a population thing, though? Like, I thought they were considered soft because there's, like, a PTQ where, like, 8 people will show up.
Yes.
Okay.
Like a Winnipeg one where it's, like, you win, like, a 30-person PTQ.
Yeah.
Right. Whereas you come to Toronto and you can't go to a PTQ for less than 300 people.
Yeah.
Right. And I think it's also because, like, certain areas don't have, are not known to have, like, strong players in that area. That so it's hard for that area to, like, grow in terms of, like, competitive. Like, Toronto obviously has strong base.
So, like, this is the other thing. So then why are those guys getting PTQs? Like, we're told that we don't get PTQs because we don't have enough people to show up, and then I'm sure that the hypocritical answer from Wizards is that they're getting PTQs because they want people to show up?
No. It's not a question of volume. It's just a question of, like, it's not a volume of players in general. It's a volume of players that are good to teach all those players to be better.
Right, yeah.
But, I mean, like, if 8 people are showing up to a PTQ, why are they still getting PTQs?
It doesn't mean... No. It's, okay, so there's probably... So there could be 100 people that are playing in the area, and they deserve a PTQ. But if all of those 100 people are, like, 65% players...
Yeah.
Then, I mean, even if there's 170 and a bunch of 40s, eventually they're all going to settle at 65. They can't get any better, right? Whereas the areas like Montreal, Toronto, even you guys out there, right? Like, the players are very, very, very good. And so you've got some of those top 10 percenters, and they help make everyone else better just by playing in the environment.
That's right. Yeah. And we've come back to the Phoenix argument that I made earlier.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Or that I was talking about earlier.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, I feel like my game has suffered a little bit because, well, one, I don't get to go and, like, play Paper Magic as much as I used to before I did the whole construction thing. But two, like, our good paper players are just not coming out to events anymore.
Yeah,
like, they'll go to PTQs difference. And stuff like that, but they don't Friday Night Magic or anything like that. It's super few and far between.
Yeah, like, we lost a bunch of guys when that happened. Like, a bunch of guys. And that happened. Like, basically, like, you just... Like, FNM became a really, like, 45-player event instead of a 20-player event, but there was, like, you know, 2 people that knew how to play Magic over a year ago. And the rest, you know, just started because of Duels of the Planeswalkers.
Yeah.
So, and it definitely hurts me. Like, there, I make so many mistakes, even playing just, like, casually. I just make so many mistakes when I'm playing because I'm just not paying attention. I never have to worry about it. Like, there's times in FNM where you just play and you just get ranched, and it doesn't matter at all because the player sitting across from you is playing, like, a garbage deck. Or is a garbage player, and you're just like, well, I guess I'll just top deck 5 lands in a row, and then I'll just top deck any spell and kill you. Great. Just fucking great. You know, like, I've been playing Tim Bjorndal's, it's not his deck, but it's like a mono red deck that he lent me in slashes. You know, he's the only guy I know playing it anyway. And it's like, what is it? It has 24 one drops in it. And the way that you beat that deck is that you just, hopefully you just block and play, like, anything that has toughness higher than 2. And just, like, all mono red decks, right? But then what happens is people just, like, try to race the red deck. And you're like, yeah, okay, like, whatever. Like, attack you. Like, yep, you played a 4-4. Like, I guess whatever. I just attack you with my 3 guys. You block one of them. You deal me 4 damage because you're going to block the Satyr, but you take 4, so we're both taking 4, and the red deck's fine with that. Okay, great, I'll do it. Okay, great, attack you. And then they're like, yeah, take it. And you're like, alright, well, you're 10 on turn 3 here. So, and they're like, yeah, whatever, take it. You're like, okay, well, like, pump one? Yeah, that's fine.
You should have, like, a print-off of who's the beatdown in your back pocket to give them after the game.
No, you just show up and you just tell them, I'm the beatdown. Block.
Yeah, but give them the article so they understand what the concept means.
No, because they won't, though. They'll just say, like, oh, okay, I'm the beatdown, yeah, because I gotta beat you, and I got big guys, right? Yeah.
Beat down.
You gotta beat that guy down, right? Yeah. Yeah, no, yeah, totally do, yep. But yeah, and it's just like, you try to teach, and you try to, and, like, I'm never, like, rude to them or anything. I'm, like, I mean, this is all comedy, but, you know, but at the same time, it's I think I talked about it, like, a long time ago when it was, like, I joined a play group, and we were trying to be a competitive play group, but I was the best player in that group. And so it was really difficult for me to get better because I was the guy that was basically just accepted and did just teach a lot. And then when we played, it was like I was the guy that was winning, and I was the guy that was playing Delver. So it was like, I didn't learn very much, right?
That's like the Jerry T story from before he top aided, like with Channel Fireball.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because he was saying he was always the best player in his team.
Oh.
And then he finally decided to leave his team and go and join, like, you know, one of the big teams. And he joined with CFB in that case and, like, just tested with them. And he felt like he wasn't the best player in the house. He felt like he was one of the weakest players in the house. And then he goes and top eights Pro Tour.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Finally.
Exactly.
And, like, yeah, there's definitely that. Like, I think that if, you know, you're out there and you're looking to start testing with guys and stuff like that, you want to be the worst player in that group.
If you're looking to get better, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, my brother-in-law, he plays the game. He flirts with the game a lot. You know, he likes Magic. He understands it. He's decent. He can, you know, do well. But he's got this thing where it's like, if he's going to play, he'd rather go win. So he'll go to, like, the softer stores in town to play at their events because he knows that he'll get prizes there. Whereas, like, I tell him, it's like, go play against the hard people because you're just going to get better. Like, you have... You've got, you know, a natural understanding of this game. Like, you can do a lot better than you're doing.
But if you weren't selling yourself
short.
Yeah, and the problem with that is that's a psychological issue that a lot of people just have, right? Like, it's not fun to go to FNM in 04, and then, like, nobody walks out of 04 FNM and is like, man, what a great lesson I learned tonight. You know what I mean? Like, nobody wants to do that.
That's actually me, though.
Well, yeah, but like, you're still bad somehow.
Well, that's the thing, is I'm terrible.
Yes!
But I enjoy being terrible, because I feel like I learn things. I'm hoping to be less terrible.
Right. But, like I said, the problem with that is that, like, a lot of people don't want to get better, they just think that they're better.
You know what I mean?
And they don't want to get better, they just want to win, and they don't understand the difference.
I gotcha.
So, like, a big problem there is, like, well, you know, it's kind of like, it's like the old work thing, right? It's like, if you want to be good at something, you got to put the work in, and oftentimes the work is thankless and hard, and it leads up to things, right? So, it's like, it's the same with Magic. It's like, you gotta lose, like, a bunch of time before you can start to win, but people don't want to do that. They would rather just, I'll just go to this place and play against these Jobins and beat them. And these Jobins don't care because they're Jobins and they just want to play for fun. So, who cares? Right?
Yeah. So.
But if you want to get better, that's what you have to do. You have to be the worst guy in your playgroup and you have to, like, just get your fucking ass kicked and force yourself to just learn. Because the other thing, too, is that you can do that and then, but then what ends up happening to a lot of guys, they just get salty about it because...
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because, like, they just get salty about it because they're just sick of losing all the time, you know? But that's where your group comes in. Like, you can't play in a group that's gonna make you feel bad for losing and not want to teach you. Like for example, this weekend, when I was talking about the green red deck, right? The guys were like, "Yeah, you need to put more green red monsters in your deck, in your cube, if you want green red monsters to be a deck." And I'm like, "Oh, really? Is that how that works? Okay, great. Like, who should I? Do you know any?" He's like, I can't think of any that aren't in there. And then they were just like, well, you need more guys that are like this guy that I know is in your cube because it was in the deck that I drafted today. And I'm like, okay, like, so that guy's in there. So like,
what now?
Who else? Like, who else? And then they're like, well, I don't know, just more guys. You got to put more guys that are green and red. And then you have a green-red guy's deck. And you're like, okay, great. And then you don't put them in, and then they just get mad at you, or they're like, this sucks, you need to put more guys in, right? It's like, well, that's not feedback that's helping anybody. And especially when you're trying to learn Magic, that happens a lot, right? Where you're like, you'll do them, like, for example, you'll have a play mistake, and somebody will be watching you, and then they'll just say, like, oh my god, you're the worst. And then you're like, oh, why? And they're like, you're just the fucking worst. Oh, okay, great. No, great. That's great. Sweet. Thanks. Cool. I'm going forward, I'll never play a land again on the first turn because apparently that's the worst. You know?
Do you have any of those, like, do you have any color hosers in your cube?
I try to limit color hosers a lot.
Okay.
Like, when you say color hoser, do you mean, like, White Knight?
Sure. Yeah. Like, Great Sable Stag and Witch Stalker?
No, like, I don't have those, no. Great Sable Stag probably could get played, but the problem with Cube is that, like, because it there's not a meta that's designed around it, right? So, like, you have things like Great Table Stag in a format where it doesn't just automatically hose generally things. Like, it's very good, but there's ways around it generally. But in Cube, like, you just find, like, with a lot of color hosers, they either just sit in sideboards because there's better cards, or they're just, like, they're too good. And then people just, like, will just bitch and moan and complain about those. And it's actually relevant feedback because there's nothing in the Cube that will kill that or deal with that. You know what I mean? And then it's like that's a shitty experience to have. Like True Name Nemesis is one. Half the people that play Cube like True Name Nemesis, and the other half don't.
Yeah.
Because, like, there's a lot of guys where they're just like, yeah, you play a True Name Nemesis, I guess I just lose. Like, there's nothing in the world that kills that in my colors or in my deck. So, sweet, I guess.
Yeah, I don't like True Name Nemesis in Cube.
Yeah, see, like, I think it's really awesome. I think it's great in Cube. It gives blue a way to just kill you instead of drawing the game out and not killing
you. Don't you have Phantasmal Bears?
No. I was thinking about putting Phantasmal Bears in, but I do not have it. But yeah, and then, like, for example, like, I overvalue, and most people overvalue swords and stuff in Cube.
Yeah.
And since playing Cube with Jeremy that one single time, I've learned that swords are actually not very good. And then since that, like, basically what happens is when you pick, like, when you're faced with, like, a pack that either has a sword or a good card in it, unless you're going to play, like, an aggressive deck or a deck that can, like, tutor up and abuse that sword, like a double striker or something, like, it's almost always better to just take the better card or take the card that kills the sword or kills the guy that's going to be wearing the sword or stuff like that. Because, like, they're just really overvalued. They just don't ever, I don't know, a lot of times they don't end up doing a whole lot. But, I mean, you know, there is, like, kind of the sour grapes left in your mouth when somebody plays, like, a Mirroring Crusader against your, you know, black-red deck. And you're like, okay, well, at least I can still burn them out. And then they just equip, like, a sword on it, like the red-blue or the red-white sword. And then you're just like, okay, like, I'm at 100. I could be at 1,000,000 life, and I just scoop because there's nothing in my deck that kills it. So yeah. I try not to play a whole lot of them. Like, I used to have, what's the one that's double white protection from red? When you play a red spell, you gain a life.
Oh, the Core Fire Dancer.
Yeah, Core Firewalker. I used to have Core Firewalker in, but it was like, it was just way, way, way too good against the red deck, like the mono red deck, and then just even just random decks with red in them just got hosed by that card because of things like sword and stuff, right? In standard, when that was a card, it was a card in, like, blue white control sideboards to combat mono red aggro. But in Cube, you could just play it in an aggressive deck with a sword or a Jeet, and then it's like, wow, fuck this game,
yeah.
fuck it right in the b hole.
Right.
Whoa.
No, the only reason I asked about the color hosers is because there's actually a lot of reasonably sized creatures that are kind of good in that role that fit the 3-drop slot, right? That you potentially be looking for to enable this build that you keep looking for. That's all.
Yeah, like Witchstalker and Great Sable Stag are good. And I've wanted actually to put a Great Sable Stag in a long time. But a problem that I have is, like, you go to Cube Tutor and I look up the cards that are non-foil. And then those are the cards that I buy. And I don't want to go through, like, 1,000,000 magic cards to find cards that are good but that I don't have in the Cube. You know what I mean? So it's in my free time, I'm generally not adding new cards to the Cube because I don't know a lot of magic cards, which is why, like, discussions like this are good, right? Because now I'm going to write down Witchstalker. So me and Brian are planning on going through the Cube too and doing that because Brian's really good for stuff like that, But yeah, it's just difficult. Like, same with things like the mono black deck. There's no drain life or corrupt or what's the one that's like 5 mana discard cards equal to swamps?
Mind sludge.
Sludge. Yeah, there's none of that in there. But people keep saying that I should be putting those in.
Yeah.
Because like there are cards that make mono black deck, like a deck. But I had those in and people didn't draft mono black. So then it was like, well, those cards can't be played in any other deck, so they have to come out. Like if they're not being played in mono black, they're not gonna certainly not gonna be played in like black red.
Well, have you made a mono black control deck? Or are you playing like a mono black aggro deck, or like what did you build?
No, both are in there.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like both are in there very easily. Both are in there too. Like, and there's also like the, all your animator spells to kind of go in between. But just like, you know, and I mean, Jeremy hit the nail on the head too, and he was talking earlier about it, where like, you know, if people are taking your removal and you're having to take things like Phyrexian Obliterator instead of a Doomblade.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's almost a choice you should never have to make, because nobody else really should be taking that Obliterator. But you know what I mean? Like how often are you going to be taking, how early are you going to take that Corrupt? Right? Like, yeah, probably not very early.
Well, it was like where they made like the, oh, what is the card I'm thinking of? They made the Fireball, they made a double red X instead, you know?
Like, oh, like, yeah.
Things like that to like.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Interesting. Cube is such a fascinating format, but not when, like, it's so funny because we like to give you so much shit,
yes,
for not playing real Magic, but you know, it's, I know you've dedicated so much time to developing this cube and your format, it's like your baby, and you know, you put so much time into it, and it's not until we get into these more in-depth discussions that it really starts to come through how much, yeah, time you put into it.
Yeah, and I mean, I think another thing with, like, a big thing with Cube too is that, like, people, you know, I think with Magic that's really super, that I get trapped in all the time. Have you guys ever had this happen where you have a Magic card and you read it and there's like maybe like an ability on it that's like a, like an evergreen ability like Trample or First Strike or Reach, and then there's also like a card box of text. So like a perfect example of this is like Annex and Simeon. So it's a 3/2 for 3/1 red white legendary creature with First Strike and Vigilance. So it's a 3/2 for 3 with First Strike and Vigilance. And then it also has Heroic. So whenever you target it, it gets +1/+1 and also gains Trample until end of turn. Okay? So when I read this card for Cube, for example, I'm just reading it as there's a red white deck that's very aggressive, and there's a 3/2 First Striker with Vigilance for 3. Which seems like a very aggressive card to me. I mean, yeah, it's not very good against the ramp deck, which just follows up your, you know, their turn 3 with a turn 4, you know, Primeval Titan. But I mean, none of your aggressive cards are good against that anyway. But it's good against other decks where, you know, they have a shitty blocker, or they have, you know, maybe a 3/3 or a 2/2 or whatever, right? Blah de blah. So I have this in my cube as one of the Boros cards, and I unanimously people want me to take this card out solely because there's not enough that targets it for Heroic to trigger. And it doesn't even have a very good Heroic ability. It doesn't get 1/1 counters. It doesn't make you sack a guy. It doesn't copy a guy. It just gets Trample and +1/+1 until end of turn. You know what I mean? And that's one of those, like, I do that a lot when I'm playing Limited, where like in a new format I'll be like, oh, what's that guy? Like a 2/4 reach, or like, oh yeah, I've seen that guy before. You're like, I play this guy, Annex and Simeon or whatever. And I'm like, yeah, whatever, that's fine. And then you attack me the next turn with it, and I'm like, chump. And then you're like, yeah, cast a spell. And I'm like, yeah, okay, so he lives, that's fine, whatever. Like, you kill my guy, but your guy lives. And then you're like, no, your guy dies, and you take 6 damage from Trample. And then I'm like, what? This guy gets Trample? Fuck, I should have read the card, right? That happens to me all the time. It has never happened to me where I've gone like, man, this 3/2... First Strike Vigilance for 3 in the aggressive colors? He's not good enough in this format because there's not enough targeted cards for him. So that's also difficult. Like you said, when it's like my baby and I'm trying to make it a balanced format and I'm trying to make all these options so you're not just stuck in a deck and everything. It's difficult because for me, I think that this is a fine card. I think this card is good enough. Easily good enough. Like, to go turn 1 Goblin Guide, turn 2, I don't know, like Searing Spear your guy, or Itzamaru and a fucking like Jackal Pup, and then to go turn 3 this guy, I think that's fine. I think that's perfectly fine. What else do you want on turn 3? You want 3 power, 3 mana? You got it. You want 2 abilities? You got them too. What else do you want? I don't know. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear that noise.
I just don't know. I don't know.
Picking up what you're putting down.
Well, I'm putting it down.
Damn the man.
Damn the man. I'm grown.
Grown? Do what you want.
It's awesome.
Yeah. All I wanted to add was earlier, Jay, your discussion about improving players. I've actually like started a Facebook group of local players.
Thanks
that
for the
like
invite. Oh, never mind.
Local players that want to get better, and we're just like playing limited, and I'm setting up a system where we're keeping track of like our ELO ratings. And yeah, so it's more precise. Sick. It's more precise because it's limited, and because we're like playing in the same, we're playing the same people. We're trying to accumulate a large sample size. We actually play best out of fives. So, and we make posts to like right now I'm on top of the mountain, and I do call people out on their bullshit when they're trying to come up with those like typical lame excuses of why they lose, or like,
yeah,
it wouldn't have mattered anyways because I was dead anyways, but you still made the mistake. Like, why are you lessening
that's the
impact?
Point, right?
That's annoying. And like most
If you want to get better, that's the, you know what I mean? That's like, I don't know if you guys watched the coverage, but there was a turn where in the top four of the PTQ, Brian was playing against future winner Tyler Blum, and Brian plays Jace, Architect of Thought, and Tyler has like, he's playing like black-white tokens or black-white humans, right? So he plays Jace, and he has another Jace in his hand, and he instead of plus one-ing the Jace, which is the minus one, minus O ability to your creatures, he minuses it to dig for an answer. Then he plays the second Jace and minuses it again. Whereas if he would have just plus one his Jace and then played it and plus one his Jace, he would have taken potentially zero mana from Tyler's attack, right? And then live instead of dying. And then, but then when you talk to some other people, they're like, oh, well, but because Brian did minus one and then played his second Jace minus one, we saw what his next three cards were, and it wouldn't have mattered. He would have died anyway.
Yeah.
And then Brian's like, Brian goes, but that was a fucking terrible play.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That was, and he doesn't argue with you. He doesn't say, yeah, but still. He doesn't say anything. He just says, yep. I'm just fucking terrible, though. That was just bad. That was just a bad fucking play that I did. And, you know, going forward, I just try to never do that.
Yeah, those are the people you want to test with. And it was, I was trying to teach, like, sometimes trying to teach, like, playing Sealed yesterday with a friend. And he has, like, five drops and six drops in his deck. He's playing against me. I beat him in a best of five. And it's a three-color monstrosity with 15 lands, and I'm just telling him like there's no way 15 lands is right, but it's like hard when like the game we just finished, he like flooded out, right? And you're just like, it's like, how can I convince this guy outside of him believing that I'm better than him? Like,
you gotta find like, just find like any Michael Jacob him complaining about results oriented thinking. Like, that's all that is.
Yeah.
And, like, the worst, where it's just like, yes, you got the corner case. Like, the only reason this discussion came up was because that corner case happened, but you got it.
Yeah.
So.
But that's a really big problem, is, like, you run into that. It's like, how do you, it's almost confirmation bias. Like, how do you, if all you've ever done is flood out because maybe you have bad shuffling or whatever, how do you tell somebody that and have them not take it personally? That's what I find is really difficult to explain to new players, right? And that's why I very rarely now try to explain it to new players. Because it's just like, I'm always mulliganing all the time. Well, it's like, well, it's because you're bad. It's like, is what they hear. When you say you need to learn to shuffle better, what you're saying to them is like, you don't know how to shuffle. And then they think, well, like, shuffling is one of the easiest things on the planet. Fuck this guy. What an asshole. But you're not saying like you're bad at shuffling. What you're saying is like, the method that you're using of shuffling is obviously just not working. If every single game of Magic you play, you're mulliganing to four, like, obviously there's a problem with, if the problem is not the number of lands, like, we've determined your deck is fine, like, there's obviously a problem with the way that you're shuffling your deck. So let's look at that and figure that out. But they just take that as, you're telling me that I can't even work my fingers. And then you're like, yeah, I am.
Yeah,
you're
that's, fucking garbage. That's, you know, about it.
Yeah, and you know who cares about that? Not me, because I fucking beat you. Get the fuck out of the chair. You know? Move the fuck on. But you lost. You don't get to talk to me. Fuck, shut up. Like that's how eventually you end up having to teach people sometimes. It's like KYT said in those groups, it's like you can't convince this guy that 15 lands in a 5 and 6 drop curve deck is correct. You can't convince this guy that that's wrong, and yet he will flood out against you. And so you have no argument. You have no basis.
I have nothing.
Yeah, you have nothing. You're dead. You're dead in the water there.
I run a pro website, yo.
Yeah. But you don't know
anything. That's what you gotta fall back on. You gotta fall back on the website.
Oh. Yeah, you gotta flash those dollar bills, right? You gotta say like, oh yeah, how many websites do you run?
Yeah. Are they pro?
Zero? Oh, sweet.
You have zero pro websites.
Alrighty, gents. It has been an evening. We got anything else on the docket for tonight?
Nope.
Nope. Oh, I have one.
Oh, okay.
But it's not magic related. It's just life related. So, tomorrow, I'm throwing Megan a surprise birthday party.
Oh my goodness.
And she's never had one of those ever in her whole life. And I arranged for all her friends to come. And I arranged for her parents to come from all the way out of town.
Oh my god!
So she thinks that she's just like, I told her like me and a friend are gonna cook her and his husband or his wife dinner. And so I was like, I'm gonna pick it from work and I'm gonna take you and Alexis to the like pedicure place. And then you guys are gonna get pedicures and me and Garrett are just gonna cook you guys dinner. No big deal. And she's like, oh, okay. Nope, that's not happening.
Nice.
Yep.
Way to go, dude.
It's gonna be sweet. So, that's all. By the time you hear this, it will be a 4-day-old friggin'
thing.
But I think it's sweet still.
I think that's sweet.
I think it's very awesome, dude. That's very thoughtful. You're being a good husband.
I do, yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty attractive, so. Also, I just did an order from Face to Face Games. I hope Wyatt Gillis gets it, and I hope that he answers the comment that I put in the anything else we could do for you on this order box.
Oh, God.
I asked him to tell me his favorite childhood memory.
And?
Well, he hasn't answered yet. I don't know. I'll see it when I get the order, I guess.
My favorite childhood memory is when Gillis wore the hat, the toque.
Oh, yeah, when he's, like, in the picture and he's got the toque on, just looking all sly.
Yeah, absolutely.
He looks like James Blunt.
Yeah, I bet he, like, just, like, swims in it.
Oh, yeah, he just sleeps in it. It's like a nightcap. You're beautiful.
Okay. Start it up, Jer. 173.
173, and I get to do it?
Yeah, you don't get the
nice
numbers.
You mean
you
have to do it?
You don't get the nice numbers.
I get the what numbers?
You're not gonna get 175, so.
Oh, why not?
Okay, go ahead.
Okay.
Just doing some exercise.